following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Cane Vineyards. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking Carnival in Trinidad and Tobago and a taste of the past. If you're just tuning in live to Hot Grease, we apologize for the delay. But as always, we will take your live calls. Our number here is 718-497-2128. Happy March, y'all. On the phone, we have Ramin Geshram, journalist, chef, and author of Sweet Hands, Island Cooking from Trinidad and Tobago, published in 2006 and expanded in 2010, and an upcoming writer of a middle reader culinary novel. Ramin, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So let's talk the Trinidad and Tobago Carnival.
Sure.
Take us inside a typical family celebration. What's going on today?
So the thing that you have to understand about Carnival in Trinidad is that it is actually not an inside celebration at all. It is completely in the streets. First of all, it starts a few days earlier with a thing called Panorama, which is competition on the steel pan, known here as the steel drum, which was created in Trinidad and Tobago. And, you know, there's any number of fêtes or parties, we call them fêtes, in the street, and dancing or winding, as we call it. And so the food is really in the streets. You know, the kind of home preparation of food, which still goes on, of course, every day in most Trinidadian homes, is a put aside during Carnival time because you eat in the streets. And so really, the food of Carnival is very much street food. So today everyone's kind of getting ready for the big, big, big show tomorrow, which is very similar to any of your listeners who've been in New Orleans for Mardi Gras and the parades and sort of the crews, as they call them down there, or the camps, as we call them, doing their parade in full costume.
So tell me a little bit more about the street food. So are there vendors set up, or do families or people bring their own food and they're kind of picnicking or, you know, passing around food? What's the street food scene like?
So we have a very, very rich street food culture, always have had, that started very much in early days from a very practical purpose, which is that, you know, people who were laboring, working as cocoa plantation workers or sugarcane plantation workers and so on, needed a very cheap place to procure food, and this is sort of in the post-slavery era, while they were working. And this is where the street food culture really sprang up in Trinidad, and it was people cooking in their home and bringing food out to the street. And we still do have that, right? But now, you know, the government licenses vendors and so on. It's too much kind of, the way we call it down there is a bacchanal, right? It's a real crazy situation.
Yeah.
So it would be kind of hard to picnic. Certainly people sit on their verandas or what we call galleries in Port of Spain or in smaller carnival celebrations if they are lucky enough to be in the parade route and kind of have their snacks. But we always have street food year-round, every day. And really what has happened is that the most popular ones that are popular generally remain popular during Carnival. One that I've noticed for some odd reason, I myself have never been able to understand it because it is it's warm to eat, very hot actually, and it's a hot time from the temperature and the crowd, is corn soup. Corn soup seems to be, it's always popular, but it seems to be super popular during carnival.
So speaking of carnival food, your book, Sweet Hands, Island Cooking from Trinidad and Tobago, is chock full of great recipes. What do you suggest for someone like myself, whom I've never tried to cook Trinidadian food? Where should I begin? Where should I start?
So I think that a really popular street food that would be very easy for you to make from the book, and that a lot of people have had very good success making, because it does hearken a little bit to Indian food, it has a basis in that, East Indian food, and foods that people have had, is something called doubles, which is essentially a fried dough, a fried yeast dough, two kind of fried dough discs, and in between, a curried chickpea mixture. And so this is a very easy, people have used the recipe to great success. I would start there versus going straight for what a lot of people want to do is the roti, which is very well associated with Trinidad.
Right.
But you kind of have to have a little skill to do that. So.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about the bakes and doubles, because I live, two or three blocks from A&A Bake and Doubles, which is right on Nostrand, between, Halsey and Fulton. And when people come, I'm trying to explain the whole bakes and doubles, and I can't. I'm like, it's just good. Try it. So what is the what is the difference between, I'm confused. You just told us a little, but what is the simple explanation to tell folks about bakes and doubles?
Sure. So a bake is really like a beignet. It's essentially, in this case, an unsweetened donut, right? And it's made with baking powder, flour, salt, water, and it's simply fried. It's actually not baked at all. It's fried in oil, and it's used very much as a simple bread, as a side dish, mostly, interestingly enough, for breakfast, although people do have it for other meals as well. Coconut bake, on the other hand, has coconut in it and is actually baked. It's one of those strange things. Our food has a lot of strange names that goes with it, a lot of strange stories. But so bake is essentially a savory baking powder biscuit. It's a baking powder biscuit that's fried instead of baked. Doubles, if you can imagine two small non-breads for your listeners who have eaten Indian food, and I'm sure there are many, or a pizza, a tiny pizza, let's say sort of a single-serving pizza dough that is fried, and then the filling, the curry chickpeas or curry chana, is sandwiched in between. And those two pieces of dough are used essentially like two slices of bread to make a sandwich.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing you saying that the bakes and doubles are the gateway drug or gateway food to eating Trinidadian food. Would you say so? Would you agree?
I would absolutely say so. Especially, it's funny because, interestingly enough, there are many, 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 many more West Indian food vendors here in New York than when I was growing up, and there are plenty of doubles places. And, they are a gateway drug because both of those items, bakes and doubles, are relatively small. So they're kind of snackish foods, and it's kind of not a big hit. So if you don't like it, no harm, no foul. Just tried something relatively small.
So I have to ask you this. What are some of your favorite places in New York City and beyond to get Trinidadian food?
Oh, that's such a good question. It's interesting. I usually now very often find myself in Richmond Hill versus in Brooklyn, although, of course, certainly I go to Brooklyn as well. But, lately the places I've become more familiar with are on Liberty Avenue in Richmond Hill. I like Sybil's a lot, which is actually Guyanese Trinidadian, so mostly Guyanese. My husband, who is actually not Trinidadian at all, he's Irish-American, will tell you that only Anil's Roti Shop is the place to go, particularly for doubles.
Now, where is this?
This is on Liberty Avenue in Richmond Hill, Queens. So what I would actually say, and my friend Daryl, who is also from home, from Trinidad, loves a place called, I think it's called Sunny's, so also on Liberty Avenue. So what I would say to listeners who really want to try a wide variety, not just of Trinidadian food, but also, let's say if they want to buy groceries and try recipes, sort of the most bang for your buck in a very concentrated location would be Liberty Avenue in Richmond Hill, Queens, or, of course, Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, but that's more spread out.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more Ramin. Keep listening, listeners.
I am proud Princess Margaret came to Trinidad. Imagine how I'm feeling glad. I am happy since the princess came to Trinidad. Imagine how I'm feeling glad and to show my appreciation. I wish you would enjoy her vacation. Enjoy the tropical breeze. Remember the queen of the West Indies. So princess, we're happy you came away. But unfortunately, you could not stay. This is a welcome that has no end. Please pay us a visit now and then.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. You can check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. If you're just tuning in live, we are chatting with Ramin Ghesharam, an American writer and chef. Ramin tweets at Ramin, R-A-M-I-N-G-A-N. E-S-H-R-A-M. Ramin, am I screwing up your name? Because you know, people know that I will really screw up a name.
No, it's okay. It's Ghesharam. Yeah,
Ghesharam.
Everyone that tells me, by the way, you need to really change that Twitter handle because it's way too long. All my Trinidadian friends, even back home in Trinidad, are like, girl, really? Come on.
That's okay. They will find you. So... And it's a really great time to be on Twitter and to be Ramin because in addition to your expanded edition of Sweet Hands last year, you worked with Molly O'Neill on her recent book, One Big Table. She was on, let's see whose show she was on. I think she was on Linda Palacio's show, Taste of the Past, recently talking about the book. How was that experience?
It was amazing. I mean, Molly is a good friend. She is as bright and interesting, sort of in all things, as she is about food. Of course, she's a consummate food writer. She's the food writer's food writer. And it was a great experience. You know, it was hard work for all of us. I worked on the book for about 2.5-3 years. Molly worked on it for 10. So kind of I feel like, you know, my tenure was just a drop in the bucket compared to what Molly did. But, you know, it really was an amazing experience to work with someone so legendary and just kind of be able to see how she uses food to see the larger world. And it was really a great learning experience. It was a great social experience, and I'm very grateful that I got to do it.
Speaking of Molly gathering recipes from every nook and cranny in the U.S., you are the co-editor, along with Chef Jeff Henderson of American I Am, Pass It Down cookbook. Mm-hmm. And for a ton of reasons, I treasure this book. Tell us about that.
Well, as you well know, because you were so kind to give us some of your wonderful recipes for this book, but, you know, essentially... Jeff, who's amazing, whose own autobiography, Cooked, of course, was a bestseller and will soon be made into a movie.
Oh, wow.
Major motion picture. Yes, yes. And I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe that Will Smith is attached to the project. to play Jeff. But Jeff and I are fortunate enough to share an amazing agent who's named Michael Saltis. And basically, Michael got me involved with the project and said, you know, based in part on projects like One Big Table that I've worked on, where really we ask people to tell us the story of their recipe so we can retell it in a way that everyone can connect to, because everyone has a story and everyone likes to hear other people's stories as a way to get to their own. And so all of last summer, I really spent a lot of time working on this book, just kind of plumbing every contact, professional, personal, assaulting people in the street, and getting their recipes for this book, which is essentially not as, you know, obviously nothing can be completely comprehensive, otherwise it would be 800 pages like One Big Table, but as comprehensive as we could do to represent the history, the culture, the social story, the immigration story of African Americans through their food.
Yeah, it's
past to present.
It's great because Jessica B. Harris was recently on Linda Palacio's show, actually last Thursday it aired. She's in the book. You have a ton of recipes from George Washington Carver. Mm-hmm. There are recipes from yourself in there. And I am totally honored to be the first recipe in the entire book. It's actually an appetizer, a snack that I grew up eating pecans. And as an adult, I started just making this rosemary candy pecan dish. So I am just honored. People should totally pick it up. And I want New Yorkers who are listening to listen up right now, because you are going to be at Purple Yam tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we love them. They were on Heritage way before the restaurant even opened, talking about their concept. And how did you connect with them? And give us a scoop on tomorrow.
Well, I met Amy Besa, who's the one half of Purple Yam, and her husband, Romy Droden, and I met them on a panel for the Brooklyn Book Festival last fall. About sort of eating Brooklyn, if you will, and we really hit it off, Amy and I, and she asked me to be a guest chef. Because they're doing an amazing guest chef series throughout the year. The last one was on Maine food with Kathy Gunst, and before that, with Ko Kyun Lam, who's also known as the Red Cook. He did a traditional Chinese feast in honor of the Chinese New Year. And so we have become friends, and she asked me to be part of this, and we decided what better time than Carnival. So we have a mix of things that are street food, like pilauri, which is a lentil-based fritter that's eaten with tamarind sauce, as well as other foods that are very representative of Trinidadian culture, like callaloo soup, which is often considered the national dish of Trinidad. And then some interesting kind of takes on things. I developed a soursop sorbet. Soursop is a very popular fruit in a lot of tropical countries, including Trinidad, and we often make soursop ice cream. And I thought, well, let's try it as a sorbet, because it's such a creamy, pulpy fruit on its own that it'll have that ice cream-like texture, but without the calorie count, which we're serving with coconut shortbread, which is a very traditional cookie.
So that is tomorrow. I think Purple Yam's website, I think if you Google Purple Yam or purpleyam.com, if you go to events, people can see all the details. And it's actually tomorrow. I think there are two seatings.
Right.
And it's not sold out. I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive that it's not sold out. But you can go straight to Purple Yam. The menu sounds fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an exciting menu. We did a run through of it a couple of weeks ago, and are pretty happy with it. I think that we're making a concerted effort to not make it Trinidad hot, because otherwise only Trinidadians would be able to eat it. But it has just enough spice. It's a great opportunity for people to try some things they may have never tried, things like pickled or escovitched conch, which is a popular sort of salad. And then also aspects of every part of our culture. So there's Creole shrimp, which is Creole cooking, just like in New Orleans, is a very it's a staple cuisine in Trinidadian culture, just as Indian influenced cuisine is very much a staple, and African influenced cuisine is a staple. The thing I'm really excited about is something called Buccaneer quail. What we usually do is Buccaneer chicken. It's almost, if you can imagine, a jerked chicken, mm-hmm. multiplicity of herbs and so on, but we're doing it with quail. And then actually, something I'm very proud of is something that my sister-in-law, who is not Trinidadian, developed using yuca, or what we call cassava, a coconut cassava patty, almost like a hash brown that we're going to be serving with the quail.
Very exciting. And you actually have, your next project is very exciting as well. You are doing a culinary novel for the under 18 crowd.
Yes.
When is it coming out?
That's coming out in August of this year, August 1st, and it's called Stir It Up. And it is, I wrote that for Scholastic, working with the amazing editorial director there, Andrea Pinckney, who is herself a children's book author. Her husband is the well-known illustrator, Brian Pinckney, and of course her father-in-law as well is quite famous in that field. And basically we came up together with the premise of this story, which is a Trinidadian American girl who lives in the aforementioned Richmond Hill, Liberty Avenue, and whose parents own a roti shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she wants to become a chef, and she gets a shot at sort of, if you will, let's say a chef competition show on a major food-based network, and sort of makes it to the finals and sort of has to do a lot of things working around her family to get there and
kind
of what happens. Yeah.
And that sounds really exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm very excited about it. I mean, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't meet a kid or the parent of a kid who is a complete foodie and really cooks and is interested in ingredients and is crazy for shows like this one and shows on the Food Network. And I know that I hope that the book will really fill a need for entertainment directly to that audience.
Yeah, you should, when a book comes out, maybe we could get a few copies, give them to some middle grade kids, they come in the show and we can all talk about it. I think that would be really
that'd be lovely.
One last question before you get off the phone. March, the month of March, is dedicated to women's history and honoring women, and I just wanted to ask you, I'm going to be asking all of my guests during this month, what women were your greatest culinary influence?
Well, I have to tell you that the greatest culinary influence, woman who is the greatest culinary influence to me, it's kind of a little bit of a sad story, but I will tell it to you, is actually my mother, who was from Iran. Her name was Parveen Ganeshram, and she passed away when I was 21 years old. And I grew up eating not just wonderful Trinidadian food, but this amazing food of Iran that my mother would prepare. When she passed away, I realized that I loved it and didn't know how to make it. So I kind of got the few Persian cookbooks that were written in English at the time. This is going on 22 years ago. And taught myself how to make my mom's food, kind of using my brother as a guinea pig and other people who knew my mom as a guinea pig, till I got it right, till I kind of recreated her specific way of cooking from memory. But really, she was my greatest female influence, because she never made a fuss about food, but it was always delicious, and you knew that it was always prepared with love.
What a beautiful story. Ramin, thank you so much for sharing that story and for being on Hot Grease today.
Thank you.
Hopefully, I will see you tomorrow, and we'll get to meet in person maybe in August when your book comes out.
I would love that. I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for your recipe.
Okay. Oh, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Listeners, keep listening. We have one more segment of Hot Grease.
My appetite. start right when you tell me no. There I go, I do what I shouldn't do. There no more wrong from right. Crossing lines to satisfy some hunger. Wonder why you just don't taste the way you used to.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by the great Jack Inslee. It's produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. And this program is being sponsored by Cane Vineyards. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. Roberta's is also the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Last Monday, something huge happened after the live Hot Grease show. Linda Palacio, host of The Taste of the Past, interviewed Dr. Jessica B. Harris. Oh my God. I was so like starstruck and was honored because Linda asked me or invited me to sit in on the portion of the show where she interviewed Miss Harris. Miss Harris has a new book out, High on the Hog, and we actually have a clip for you today. Here it is.
Your host here on Heritage Radio Network, and today we are going to be talking about the African American diaspora and the foodways of Africa to America, the culinary journey of Africa to America, with my special guest today, Jessica Harris, whose new book is called High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America. Jessica is the author of 11 cookbooks documenting the foods and foodways of the African diaspora, notably the Africa Cookbook, Iron Pots and Wooden Spoons, Africa's Gifts to the New World Cooking, and The Welcome Table. And in these books, she presents African-American recipes of all sorts, from slave cooking, which is the source of many of the classic Southern dishes, to family favorites that she grew up with. Jessica is a tenured professor of English at Queens College and consults at Dillard University in New Orleans, where she founded the Institute for the Study of Culinary Cultures. A culinary historian, Dr. Harris has written and lectured widely on African-American foodways and culture. She's been honored numerous times for spreading the word of African and Caribbean cuisines around the world and received the Heritage Award from the Black Culinarians and was recently inducted into the James Beard Foundation's Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. So, as I said, today she's with us to talk about her newest book, which has been published by Bloomsbury Press, called High on the Hog. Welcome, Jessica.
Well, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. The first thing I would like to ask you is, all right, tell our listeners what you mean and where you got the high on the hog.
High on the hog. The expression is actually Southern and more than likely African-American. And the tale that's actually in the front of the book is an old Mass and John tale. Certainly, trickster tales are not unique to Africa, but in this case, it's a trickster tale that comes out of the plantation experience. And so it's a story about an interaction between Massa and John. And basically, Massa comes down to the slave cabin at hog killing time and asks John to go down to the back 40 with him, help him kill the hogs, and he says, and I'll give you, you know, usual payment, the ears, the tail, the head, the feet, and a bucket of guts. That would be the chitlins and the hog maws. And John says, yes, Massa, and he goes down and he kills the hog, and he gets the ears, the tail, the head, the feet, and the bucket of guts. And this goes on for years. And then finally, John gets his own hog. And then he gets another one. And so the subsequent year, Master goes down to the slave cabins and says, John,
It's hog killing time. I want you to come down to the back 40, help me kill the hog, and I'll give you usual payment, the ears, the tail, the head, the feet, and a bucket of guts. And John sort of rears up and says, I don't rightly think so, master. I've got my own hogs now. I'm eating bacon and middling and backbone and pork chops and ham. I'm eating higher on the hog. I'm eating high on the hog now.
So like what you just heard? Okay, if you do, go to our website or go to iTunes. Look for Linda Palacio, Taste of the Past. Her show is awesome, and you can listen to the full interview, 30 minutes, of Dr. Jessica B. Harris talking about African-American and African food ways, particularly in her latest book, High on the Hog. If you are listening and you're in New York area, I'm having an event. Actually, I have my apprentice / assistant / intern Shannon in the studio. Hot Grease, aka Food Culturalist, will be doing a donut tweet up on, what's the date, Shannon?
It's going to be March 19th.
March 19th. And if you go or you Google Tweet Vite, or it's like a tweet up, it's like an invitation thing, kind of like meetup, you'll see the whole event details. March 19th, we're starting at 10. The first stop is
Dough on Lexington and Franklin in Bed-Stuy.
Yep. And y'all know I've talked about Dough a million times. So Shannon's going to come on the show probably again. We're going to, or something, take photos or something and helping me out with creating live events outside of Hot Grease so people can connect together. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening to Hot Grease. You can join me every Monday live at 3:30, or you can go straight to our website or iTunes and download the podcast. Until next time, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house, where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join wine impresarios Aaron Fitzpatrick and Brian DeMarco as they dish out on the latest industry news with winemakers and tastemakers on Heritage Radio Network's revamped wine show, Unfiltered. Aaron Fitzpatrick, one of the first hosts on HRN with her program At the Root of It, amps up the volume and unfiltered content with co-host Brian DeMarco in this 2011 Redux. True to the original format, Aaron and Brian will keep you abreast of current happenings and break down the news and global events, distilling complex into anecdotal stories that inspire. From media and political events to hailstorms in Argentina, no topic is out of bounds. Tune in every week to hear them chat up the industry's biggest personalities and host on-air tastings with visiting vintners and the country's hottest sommeliers. Whether you're an expert or an enthusiast, Unfiltered demystifies wine and lets you know what it really takes to get a bottle from the vineyard to your neighborhood wine shop. Unfiltered broadcasts live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.